Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guest on today's podcast, and I'll have him introduce himself in a second, is Craig Newsom. And just as background, I am in Salt Lake City. It's a Saturday afternoon, and Craig is on the phone in New Zealand. It's 7:30 in New Zealand, and Craig is calling in. So I hope that you can hear Craig okay. We've never done a Google Hangout call international, so I'm pushing the ends of my technology understanding. But just to give you a little background on Craig, Craig found my email and started listening to my podcasts, and I've wanted Craig to be on the show. Craig is about my age. I'm in my mid-50s. I think he's a little younger. Craig grew up outside of the church and has been connected with other religions, Jehovah Witnesses and maybe some Pentecostals. And he's gay. He will share his story being gay and having, you know, and being in that world for quite a bit, and then gradually finding his way into the church. And Craig is unique because he has this great perspective of being in other religions and then finding the truth of a restored church and talking about what it's like for a gay man to join our church and now be active in our church. So, Craig, welcome to the podcast. Give us some Maori language.
Oh, tata Māori e hoa, ngā mihi nui ki a koutou, tēnā koe, kia ora Richard, no Aotearoa, the land of the long white cloud.
So I love the Maori language. I wish I knew it. How old are you, Craig?
So I'm 55, just coming up 56.
Well, you're a lot younger than me because I'm coming up on 58. And just talk about how long ago did you join the church, and then we'll tell your full story.
So I was baptized on October the 28th, 2017. And I was probably in, well, yeah, it's a little bit complicated, but we'll come to that later. But I investigated online for about a year and a half. And then I had the missionary, I met the Latter-day Saints for the first time in kind of like 6 months later. So kind of 2 years I was investigating.
And have you gone through the temple? Have you received your endowment in the Melchizedek priesthood? I can't remember.
Yes, so I went through the temple on the 6th of December, just gone. So I've received my endowments, and I got the Melchizedek priesthood some months before that.
That is awesome. Yeah. Which temple did you go to, Craig?
So our temple over here is closed down for 3 years for renovations and earthquake strengthening. So I went over to Australia and I went through the Melbourne temple. I think I did about 3 days over there. And then 2 weeks later, I went through the Brisbane temple as well.
That is great. Well, and Craig offered the prayer before we went live, and there's a great spirit about Craig. I should start recording these prayers, but I didn't. So take us back to your family. You were in a Jehovah Witness family, I think, growing up in New Zealand.
Yeah, that's right. So my mum studied with the Witnesses when we were really little. And I can remember, I must have been able to read, I'm not sure, but I can certainly remember hauling Jehovah's Witness books and Bibles around the house. And I did have a really strong... I knew that God was real, even like really, really little. So we kind of did that. And then my parents got divorced when I was about 7. And then probably, a year maybe later, Mum got together, married with another man. And he was, let's just say not very nice. I think in my early, kind of in my from about the age of 10, I started, we had a Kingdom Hall just down the road. And I think partially, it was what I was raised with, so obviously I believed it. I think also it was an escape for me from home. And so I used to trundle down the Kingdom Hall all on my own and go to all the meetings and had, some very, very, people that really loved me there, and they were, terribly nice people. and had good friends there. excuse me. So when I hit puberty is probably when the problems began. I didn't really have language for it at the time, but I realized that I was, you know, there was something different about me, and all my friends were crushing on girls and I was crushing on boys.
It's honest.
And, yeah, so being in the witnesses, like, I knew that there was something terribly wrong with me, and I didn't quite have the language for it, but I knew that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't going to go down well. So I kept very quiet about it. I kind of discovered my first dad had, well, even the second dad as well, kind of had porn collections. So I was kind of introduced to that. So I wasn't introduced to it by anyone. I just found it. But so I was kind of very aware of sex very young.
Let me press pause for just a second. I think our visitor's here. Hang on.
Okay.
Okay, to our listeners, I paused the podcast, and one of the missionaries that served in the area where Craig joined the church has just joined us, Brother Alan Thacker, who and his wife served a senior mission there for 19 months. Welcome to the podcast, Brother Thacker.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Have you been on a podcast before?
I have not.
Well, you look good. You look ready to go. And so what we'll do is we'll let Craig continue to tell his story, his life outside the church and the different roads he took. And then towards the end of the podcast, the last 15 minutes or so, I'd like to have Craig talk about joining the church. And maybe we'll get to that earlier. And then Elder Thacker, who's been released, so I'll probably still call him Elder Thacker, but he's Brother Thacker or Alan Thacker, will share his thoughts serving a mission there and getting to know Craig. And I think that will be helpful for our listeners. So we're going to turn it back to you, Craig, to tell your story.
Yeah, cool. So I kind of discovered, I guess porn and masturbation quite, you know, very young.
Right.
And, but I was also very into the witnesses, and I think partially because I believed it, and I think partially because things were really not great at home. So I did that, and then by the time I kind of hit 16, I had been quite a talented kid on the piano, and my teachers had all said, you know, you need to go to university and, you know, take this further. And the witnesses kind of said, they did say that, Armageddon's just around the corner. If you go and get higher education or, you know, become a concert pianist or whatever, that's taking glory away from Jehovah and bringing it to yourself. So, you know, don't go to university. So I decided at 16, by this stage, I kind of like realized that I was gay, although I didn't really have language for it, but I knew definitely by then that I was gay. And me and my best friend, who was gay also, although nothing ever kind of like happened between us, but we did come out to each other. And I was 16 and decided that if I went and did the full-time preaching work, that would cure me of this, you know, of this thing that was wrong with me, that if I just served Jehovah full-time, and Armageddon was coming anyway. So I left school at 16 and went and knocked on doors for 2 years.
Wow.
Hoping that, you know, the homosexuality would go away, and of course it didn't. By the time I was 18, a Watchtower article actually came out, and it talked about homosexuality and masturbation, and it was like finally I had, you know, black and white language that described what was wrong in italics with me. And so I rushed over to some of my friend's house, whose their dad was an elder. So their elders are not elders like in our church. I think elders for them are more like bishops and stuff like that. So I rushed over to the elder's house and I kind of took the Watchtower article with me and said, this is what I, you know, what I am. And it was all just really awful. It was just horrible. It was all awful. And so he got a committee, a judicial committee together like that evening. And I had to go before that before three elders and on my own. And I had to confess to them that I was, you know, there was, that this was wrong with me and that I'd been, you know, and I'd also accidentally discovered I'd had sex with another, with a man, which I discovered in a slightly unfortunate place in my hometown. And so I had to confess that to them. And so I was just immediately stripped of all my congregational responsibilities and stripped of being a pioneer, what they called a full-time workers pioneer. So I was stripped of all that. And the elders said, you know, they'll get back to me. And, you know, so it was very much on the cards that I would be disfellowshipped. And disfellowshipped with the witnesses, when you get disfellowship from the witnesses, you lose everything. You lose your whole world. That they, a witness will walk down the street and not greet you, will not even say hello to you, will not look at you. You're basically dead to them. So I knew this, you know, the chances were that I would be losing everything. So I was really repentant and I didn't want to get disfellowshipped, but, you know, the elders never got back to me for about, you know, 3 weeks. Nothing happened. And in the meantime, you know, I got together with my friend who, you know, was also gay, and we cooked up this scheme that we would run away to the capital city over here. And he had gone to school with a friend who was a transsexual. Had become a transsexual in Wellington here. So we cooked up this scheme that we would run away to Wellington. So I rang up the elders and I said, look, I'm going to, you might as well just fellowship me because I'm going to go to Wellington. I can't. And my reasoning was that it was that if I was going to go and live the gay lifestyle, I didn't want to bring a bad reputation on Jehovah's name or Jehovah's organization. So I was fully believing of, you know, all that stuff. And yeah, so they disfellowshipped me and I had to kind of like make a grand escape plan from home because my stepfather would have probably killed me. So he wasn't a witness, but he knew all the witness rules and kind of used all of that stuff against us. So I kind of made this quick exit from home and came down to Wellington. So that kind of ended my Jehovah's Witness career.
That took a lot of courage, Craig, to go talk to the Jehovah's Witnesses. I admire you sort of manning up as an American term. I don't know if that's a New Zealand term. And recognizing that you needed to talk to your leaders and that led to being disfellowshipped. I admire your integrity to do that. And that is difficult to be, you know, cut off and shunned. And so I admire you, you know, and it makes a little bit of sense that you needed to just kind of get on your own and figure out your own life. And so credit to you for, you know, sort of walking through that. So now you're in Wellington.
Yeah, so now I'm in Wellington. So we moved in with these. So I don't know about the appropriate language for over in the States there. So I'll just use the language that, you know, we use here. And don't forget, I'm talking about the very early 80s. So, you know, even now it would have changed. But so we moved in with these drag queens, and that, so they were living full time as transsexuals. And they told us they were waitresses because they would go out every night dressed up. And, you know, we were just these really, you know, we were fresh out of a very reclusive, you know, quite a reclusive religion. And, you know, we knew nothing about the world. And, you know, the way that I was raised was that the world was a very, very, very bad place. And that if you were going to leave the the witnesses in living the world that nothing but badness would happen because of that. So when we, you know, we were staying with these girls, and two or three weeks into it, you know, the subject of drugs came up, and I just said, yeah, sure. And so I took my first drugs, and, you know, in a lot of ways, it was a huge relief to kind of discover drugs at the time. And then kind of, maybe a week or two after that, you know, we discovered that these girls weren't actually waitresses. They were street workers, street, you know, prostitution. So we were kind of like, you know, in that kind of world. And I don't think that world over here, you know, back in the day, you know, was quite as rough as it is in some places in America. Like, there wasn't, there wasn't a great deal of violence or anything like that. But yeah, so these girls kind of like looked after the pair of us, and they sent us off to the sauna, and they sent us off to the gay bar, and kind of, you know, we were meant to kind of become involved in that world. And I just didn't feel comfortable with it. And, you know, I just really hated myself. You know, I hated what I was. You know, I'd been raised to believe that what I was just the worst thing that you could ever be. And I hated myself, and I'd go to the gay bar, and like, I just didn't relate to anyone there. And, you know, it was just an awful time, and I discovered drugs. And so I think a few months into it, I can't quite remember the timeline, because I was, you know, with great regularity getting high. So, but anyway, eventually I decided, well, you know, maybe my problem is that I'm not meant to be a guy. Maybe I'm, you know, I was living with transsexuals, you know, maybe my thing was, you know, that I was actually a girl and that I was transsexual. You know, I was very effeminate and all that anyway. And so I started living as a female, started, you know, working the streets. And so in order to work the streets, of course, I had to take more drugs, and then to get more money for the drugs, I had to work the streets more. So, yeah, I was just doing that. And I did that until I was maybe 21, 22. And I was just miserable. And I can remember when, by the time I was about 22, I can remember I looked in the mirror one day and I saw this female looking back at me. And, you know, I was like, you know, I could walk down the street, I could live my life, and people would just think that I was female. And I can remember that day looking in the mirror and going, I still hate myself. Nothing's changed. You know, even though I thought that being female would solve my problem, it just didn't. And, you know, to be frank, it was a pain being female. All the bras and having makeup was a pain in the neck, and I didn't really like it. So I just looked in the mirror and just thought, I still hate myself, you know. But I kind of, by that stage, I was tied up in the drugs and I was tied up in the prostitution, and I couldn't really find a way out of it. So for one reason or another, I moved back to my hometown. And the people that I was living with in my hometown were actually living next door to Pentecostal Christians. So I, for 6 months, I would have nothing to do with them, because Pentecostal Christians were of the devil, obviously. I didn't have anything to do with them for, you know, months and months. And then I think eventually I slowly started getting to know them, and they were really nice people. They were great. They were really nice people, and like, they would take in street people and street kids and get kids off the street. So I was living next door to them, but, you know, would be over there, you know, all the time. And, you know, they would tell me that, you know, Jesus was, you know, Jesus would solve all my problems, you know, that if I just came to Jesus, that, you know, I'd be able to get off the drugs and off the prostitution and out of drag. So I, you know, resisted it for a very long time. And then, you know, eventually they got me to go to church, and I went to this evening service and just had this kind of really full on Pentecostal conversion, you know, tears and tongues and all the rest of it. All in that one session. So I went to church with him and I got saved that night. And so from then on, I think I ended up moving in with them, and then I moved in with a pastor and his wife for a few months. But it was very straight around there. So I actually moved back in with my friends that I used to live next door with. And we were friends, you know. I got a job in a menswear store, which is ironic, I know. Got a job, got off the drugs, got off the prostitution. And I just, you know, I did have a very, you know, ever since that time, I've had a strong testimony of Jesus Christ, you know, in the Pentecostal form. But still, you know, I knew that I loved God, and I knew that I wanted to have God in my life. And so the only problem with my Pentecostal Christianity was that it was, you know, you can serve Jesus, but you need to pray the gay away. You need to be straight. If you're going to go to heaven, you've got to be straight. And so you've got to allow God to make you straight. So I went to a 12-step fellowship for ex-gays for Christ. And I just tried, you know, until I was 30 years old, I just, you know, I begged God to make me straight. I prayed in tongues for hours on end and read the scriptures and didn't have anything to do with gay people, and, you know, was very ensconced in the Pentecostal church, and, you know, was playing in the praise and worship band, and, you know, it was, for a few years, it was, for 2 or 3 years, it was really good. And then it got really difficult because I wasn't changing. I didn't need the drugs or the prostitution or the drag, my fundamental homosexuality was very much, not going to change. And so that caused me just so much pain. It was just, life once again just became a nightmare, because I just, like, I loved the Lord, but I couldn't not be gay. And it was just a nightmare, Brother Richard. It was just horrible, you know. And by the time I got to 30, I'd started, you know, smoking pot again. So when I was young, I did a lot of pharmaceuticals, but when I started doing drugs and drinking a bit again, I just did pot. And in fact, actually, I didn't even do beer. I just did pot. So I'd started doing that, and I was trying really hard, and I kind of, my life was this roller coaster of, I would be great with the Lord for a few days, and then masturbate or whatever. And so I would plummet into the pits of despair, and my relationship with the Lord would be, you know, non-existent. And then I'd drag myself up and, you know, repenting and, you know, drag myself up. And then I'd be great with the Lord again for a few days. And then once again, you know, I would muck it up. And so this just became intolerable. Like, by the time I hit 30, I was just like, I just can't do this anymore. I can't, you know, I just couldn't. I couldn't live like that anymore. My life was a living hell. If I was the suicidal type, I would have. I'm just not the suicidal type, truth be told. But
we're glad you're alive, yeah. Craig.
Suicide has never really been a thing. So I kind of came to 30 and I was like, you know what? You know, by this stage, you know, I had done everything. I'd relied on the Lord to do everything. You know, I had friends tell me, you know, I had this counselor, you know, this Christian counselor, and she, you know, she told me I was rebellious. And I just didn't think I was rebellious. You know, I just couldn't make this work, you know, and it was just horrible. And so in the end, by the time I got around 30, maybe just before 30, I said, you know what? This is just, it's all a load of rubbish. None of it is true. God's not true. That I felt that I had been had. I don't know if you use that expression over there, but I felt that I had been just manipulated my whole life by religion. I left the church. And I just said, you know what, I'm just going to go out and be myself and be gay and, you know, blow God. I decided that it was all just a figment of my imagination, and that, you know, we were pumped up continuously by praise and worship in church. You know, and you know, that was what I was feeling, that, you know, it wasn't the Holy Spirit, that it was just, you know, group hysteria, you know. And I decided that my relationship with God had just been a fallacy and had been a lie. And so I left the church, and I left extremely angry. I felt betrayed by God. I felt that he'd made promises, and, you know, e.g., you know, seeing, you know, making me be straight. And I just felt that it was all just a lie and that it was a have. And so I left the church very angry, and I actually came back to Wellington. And I came back to Wellington, so this was around 30, and I just, you know, I had jobs, so, you know, I was working and stuff. So I got a job down here, and I just, you know, kind of entered the world as a 30-year-old into the gay world. I started smoking pot again, like, with great. Well, actually, that's not quite right, because I started smoking pot in New Plymouth. Because I'd left the church in New Plymouth, that's right, but it must have been 2 or 3 years before I came down here. Because I was smoking pot in New Plymouth, I remember that. I was living with this girl. She was a heavy metal chick. She introduced me to heavy metal. And she also introduced me to drinking. So I was doing pot and I was doing booze. And I started doing it every day. And I was just really anti-Christianity. And I was drinking my pot and smoking my pot and drinking my booze every day, and just was enjoying life being a 30-year-old gay guy. So I came down to Wellington, continued that lifestyle. I met a guy down here in the sauna, and we ended up being together. We were together for 13 years. I think a lot of it, I think we were really good, but our relationship was fueled with alcohol. I think we probably wouldn't have lasted 13 years if we weren't drunk most of the time. But he was a good man. He's a good man. I mean, he is a good man. We're still friends today. And, yeah, as I said, we were together for 13 years. We didn't live together because I was terrified, and probably still am, of that kind of level of intimacy. I don't cope well with intimacy, and I think, you know, probably a lot of it has to do with my youth and my, you know, the religions that I had been entangled with and stuff. So, but, you know, for what it was, we had a good relationship. And but my drug and alcohol usage just became more and more and more. And I was drinking in the morning. I was smoking pot 24/7. I would go to work stoned. In fact, the odd time when I turned up not stoned, everybody thought that I was sick because they were so used to seeing me stoned. They didn't know any different. So by the year 2000, I had come across 12-step fellowships in the past. So I kind of knew about recovery sort of vaguely. People had told me in the past that I needed to get into rehab. And I was always really resistant to it, mainly because I, in some senses, I was quite a high-functioning alcoholic addict. Like, I always maintained a job. You know, I didn't steal off people. I didn't beat anyone up. I didn't. I wasn't a street kind of, you know, addict. So because of that, I think that, you know, I'm not that bad, so I don't need rehab. But by the time I got to 2000, I got into rehab. In rehab, you know, walked into the rehab, on the wall, 12 steps, God, all through the steps. And I was just like, ugh, no way. And I had this really good alcohol and drug counselor, and, you know, he would say, oh, you know, you need to get a higher power to, you know, overcome your addiction. And I was like, well, I ain't doing God and I ain't going back to Christianity. And he said, well, he was really good. I mean, he said a really good thing to me, and it kind of started me on the path that I kind of ended up on. And he said to me, well, how, you know, how has the Christianity gone for you so far, Craig? And I was like, well, not very good, obviously. And he said, well, why don't you make up your own higher power? And I said, don't be ridiculous. You can't do that. It's not in the Bible. And he said, well, you know, like, he said, well, how's that gone? And I was like, oh, not very well. So he said, so he got a whiteboard out, and like, he's got me to write down what I would like in a higher power. And so, like, I was like, you know, well, you know, greater than me, loves me, doesn't judge me, doesn't want me to be someone that I'm not, you know, all that sort of thing. And he said, okay, well, why don't you just have that as a higher power? And so that was kind of like the first chink in this armor of, you know, I kind of feel that my whole life, I had been spoon-fed other people's ideas about God without thinking for myself. You know, the witnesses gave me this version of God. The Pentecostals gave me this version of God that, you know, I couldn't, you know, I just kind of accepted it blindly, and, like, there was no kind of there was no kind of, you know, thinking within myself of what do I think of this. I just, you know, it says it in the Bible, therefore I've got to accept it, you know. And in Romans 1, 1 Corinthians 7, you know, chapter 6, you know, all this, you know, God hates gays. So, you know, that, you know, when he kind of got me to make up my own higher power, it was kind of like the first opportunity I had to actually start thinking for myself and not just drowning my life in alcohol and drugs and, you know, partying and sex. So I started doing that, and then within a year or two, I kind of, like, I'd been clean. Like, I stayed clean the first time for 6 years.
Wow.
And during that time, like, it was, you know, about a year and a half into my recovery, I broke up with my partner because he wanted to keep drinking, and I just discovered that there was a world out there and I wanted to go and check it out, you know, and, you know, like the good stuff, the good things in the world, I mean. And so, you know, I got a good thing, and a couple of years into it, so I'd kind of, you know, this making up my own higher power business, I'd actually come to quite a complex kind of relationship with a higher power. So I didn't want God. I didn't want to have a deity, and I didn't want to have, you know, I didn't want to have any kind of thing outside of myself. You know, I didn't want God. But I was very happy to kind of have that whole, you know, the universe is a good place and what I put into it, I'll get back. And if I, you know, give out good, I'll get back good. And so a couple of years into my rec, so kind of around 2002, I discovered the Buddhist teachings. And the Buddhist teachings were really good because they, well, for a start, they didn't have a deity. I know a lot of people think Buddha's a deity, but actually he's not. You know, and the whole kind of karma thing of, you know, giving and, you know, reaping and sowing, the whole kind of, you know, universe, you know, the respect for all human life, like all that sort of stuff really appealed to me. And it kind of really resonated with what I had begun to believe for myself. I think the stuff about the Buddhism for me was that I could have a prayer life. It wasn't a prayer life like when I was in Christianity, but it was a prayer life. So, you know, we did a lot of chanting. So the fundamental practice of the Buddhist practice that I was practicing was chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. So if you've seen the Tina Turner movie, I can't remember what it's called at the moment, but the Tina Turner, it was the Buddhism that she turned to. So I did the chanting and was very involved in Buddhism. And the other great thing about Buddhism is that nobody cared if you were gay. In fact, they celebrated it. So it was a very, very, you know, I practiced it for 15 years and it was a very good, it was really good for me. Like I will never say that there was anything bad about it. It was a good practice and it taught me to be a better human being. It taught, you know, I guess the only thing that kind of, so you kind of make up your own rules on how you want to live with it, which was kind of, for me anyway, it kind of worked, but it kind of didn't. Like, for instance, you know how we had the law of chastity and stuff, you know, in our church. Well, there was no kind of, you know, the only rule there was don't cause harm to other people. But then, of course, it's up to you what you consider to be causing harm. So by me being completely promiscuous, because I wasn't, in my eyes, causing harm to anyone or myself, except for the odd venereal disease, you know, I that wasn't causing harm, so therefore it was okay to do that. And so, yeah, I through my 12-step recovery, I kind of learned about sex addiction. I went to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, so SLA they call it over here, but I went to SLA for a year and I checked out celibacy for about 2 or 3 months and that. And I kind of learned that through going to SLA for a year that I don't think that I was a sex addict, but I think I used sex addictively at times.
That's very insightful. That's very insightful.
So I was kind of aware of that, but basically ever since I left the church, or even ever since before I left the church, you know, the Pentecostal church, I had fallen into a habit of porn and masturbation on a daily basis, if not twice daily, but definitely a daily basis. And I did that every day right up until, well, I will come to that. But yeah, so sex, porn and masturbation was big for me. The last kind of, so after me and my partner broke up, did a lot of saunering and all that sort of stuff. But, and even in recovery, in fact, I think in recovery, I probably did more of it because I think I was using sex instead of drugs and alcohol. But, I would, so sex was huge for me. And the last kind of 10 years, I I, you know, was kind of getting older, and, you know, I knew that I was getting older, and like, I didn't want to be some, you know, desperate old guy, you know, running around a sauna, you know, it just didn't have any appeal to me. But,
let me jump in just a little bit, because I want to get to your, just some thoughts. First of all, and Alan's here with me, who knows you really well, and I just know you a little bit, is we're just glad you're alive. I'm just glad that you survived this, and I think a lot of the things you were doing in your life was just to deal with pain. I think the drugs and alcohol, which are wrong, is sometimes keeps us from dealing with the core pain that we have, and it's an escape. And even to your points about some of your behavior, I think that's, and the more I understand, that's more about pain and escaping. And I think as you matured and as you connect with God in different ways, you were just able to come to who you are, and that you're fundamentally a good person and worthy of God's love. And I think that helps you make better decisions. But we've got about 20 minutes left. Can you talk about just, and we may be skipping a little bit here, but talk about how you found the church.
Yeah, sure. So I was, I was very happily Buddhist. And then what happened was must be about 4 years ago now, I started listening to podcast, well, kind of YouTube channels really, but they have a lot of podcasts on YouTube. And I actually came across ex-Jehovah's Witness stuff on YouTube, and there's a big kind of community of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses out there that, you know, make podcasts and YouTube channels. And one of these YouTube channels actually did an interview with John DeLynn from Mormon Stories. And that was the first time that I ever had kind of even thought about Latter-day Saints. So I started watching John DeLynn, and I was purely interested in it from a sociological point of view. I wasn't interested in it religiously. I was just interested in it because I found it really fascinating because, you know, J-Dubs and Latter-day Saints are always compared, you know, I started watching Mormon Stories, and I was like, man, these guys are nothing like the Witnesses. But the thing that I was really interested in with the Latter-day Saints was there just seemed to be a lot more wiggle room for people, you know, like people that were questioning faith or, you know, having faith issues or faith transitions or whatever, you know, that there was a lot more wiggle room than we ever had as Witnesses. And I just found that really fascinating. And then he ended up doing a whole year's worth of interviews with LGBT people. And it was from that I kind of like got this sense, you know, mixed in with the I'm gay and I'm leaving the church. But there was also other stories, like, you know, Carolyn Pearson's story was a major one for me. You know, just that there was kind of so much more wiggle room that even as it from being a Pentecostal, but, you know, especially from being a J-Dub, that there was more room for love and more room for acceptance within Latter-day Saint theology. And I know that it hadn't, you know, I even picked up that it hadn't always been like that. But in recent years, you know, things had changed. And so I started through John DeLynn, I twigged onto other podcasts, and then I came up, you know, people talking about their faith crises. And so, of course, and after a while, I realized, well, and somewhere along the line, I think in a Mormon Stories thing, somebody talked about Fair Mormon. And so I started looking at their stuff, and then I realized that, you know, okay, so people were having these faith crises, but there was kind of other answers to them. And so I started kind of getting interested in that. And then, so you've got to bear in mind, I looked at this stuff for like a year and a half and had never met a Latter-day Saint. So I kind of had all these, you know, I ended up with kind of quite a few questions like, oh, what's a stake and what's a word of wisdom and, you know, kind of things like that. And I started getting a bit interested. At this stage, I would have said I wasn't interested. I was quite happy doing the Buddhism. But I thought, oh, well, I'll just, you know, go and have a look at a Latter-day Saint church service just to see, because I'd, you know, been looking at it for a year and a half, but, you know. So I went to the sacrament meeting, and after the sacrament meeting, talked to the missionaries, and I'd also discovered by this stage, you know, through these other sources that, you know, the fundamental theology, you know, with our church is that you can be gay, but, you know, like God isn't going, the church or the God isn't going to tell you that you must be straight. But, you know, if you live the law of chastity, that you can have a relationship with the Lord. And if you live the law of chastity, you know, that you can be, you know, that God hasn't got this pressure on you to be straight.
Yeah, and that is a big difference.
That was brand new for me.
Yeah, and I'm reading your email to me. I really liked how the LDS taught that we're not evil just because we're gay, but we still need to live the law of chastity. And one of the things that I like about your podcast is, you know, I've just grown up Mormon, and maybe Alan has too, who's here, but
Yes. We've
never known the perspective of what it's like to be in other faiths and know just how that doctrine that you're created the way God wants you to be, Craig, and it doesn't take commandment keeping off the table, but I think it can take shame off the table. You don't feel you're a mistake and you're fundamentally worthy of God's love. So that's helpful.
Yeah.
Talk about the missionaries and just talk about how you decide to get baptized.
Yeah. So what happened was, so like I went to the service, and it was funny, I said to the missionaries, they wanted my address, and I said, no, don't worry about it, I've just come to have a look. But then, I don't know, a couple of weeks later, I by this stage I had twigged on that, like, the story is that you read the Book of Mormon and then, you know, ask if these things are not true. And so I thought, well, I guess there can't be any harm in getting a Book of Mormon. So I sent away for Book of Mormon online. And so I got this Book of Mormon. And then at the same time, I thought, oh, maybe I should just have the missionaries come around and just have the discussions. Like, I knew kind of, you know, I knew about all this sort of stuff, you know, sort of. So I, you know, went online, and there's a thing there at the church website where you can get the missionaries over. So the missionaries came over, and so I kind of started reading the Book of Mormon, and the missionaries arrived, I think, around the same time. And I think there was a part of me, I can remember I would be chanting and stuff, and I would feel that, you know, it's just kind of had become less satisfactory for me. And then at the same time, I think after, you know, looking at all this other stuff for a couple of years, I think there was just this tiny little slither of, I wonder if it could this be a way back to this God that I didn't even believe in anymore? You know, could this be a way? And it was only flashing, you know, it wasn't kind of anything big. But because of that, I thought, well, you know, there's no harm in giving it a shot. So I got the missionaries that I got over, out of Frodsham and another missionary who was just about to finish his mission. So out of Frodsham was new out, and out of Wilkinson was kind of 3 months off finishing his mission. So these two missionaries, they were the best. I mean, I don't know, maybe all converts say that their missionaries were the best missionaries for them. But I, you know, I really do think they were, because we, you know, these guys were, you know, Elder Wilkinson was very bright and knew his stuff. And Elder Frodsham was a real kind of, You know, I can remember, you know, he would often turn to me and say, how does that make you feel, Craig? You know, what do you think of that, Craig? You know, he was kind of, yeah, they were a great team. And for some reason, they stayed in our ward for like, 7 months, I think, Elder Fletcher was there. I don't know how that happened. But so I started reading the Book of Mormon, and I can remember the first time I got this Book of Mormon, and I thought, okay, so I was kind of used to, through Buddhism, you know, we had prayers morning and evening, so I was really used to that. So, and, you know, as well as doing my chanting, I would open up the Book of Mormon, and for the first time in 25 years, I prayed, and I just said to God, If you exist, and if there's anything to this, and if, you know, whatever, please feel free to let me know. And so I started reading the Book of Mormon, you know, morning and evening, and I was still doing my chanting, and I was having the discussions, and I don't know, I just felt this real, I can remember the first time I felt the Holy Ghost while I was reading in my room, and I was like, I didn't really know what it was, but I knew that it wasn't me, and I knew that it was something new. And that got more and more and more, and my chanting got less satisfactory, and for a while I thought that I could kind of do both. But I started chanting less and reading and praying to the Lord more, and reading about the Savior and reading. I think, you know, by the time I hit Alma 32, I was like, there's something going on here, and I didn't know what it was, but it was something good. And it was saying, so I got to Alma 32, and, you know, for me, my experiment on faith was going to be, you know, planting that seed of faith, or I can't remember the words now, but for me, it was going to be, you know, okay, if there's anything real about any of this at all, how is living the law of chastity going to be for me? So that was kind of my fleece that I flung out. So I said to the Lord, I had a really potty mouth. I was a very enthusiastic swearer. So I made this choice that I would start living the law of chastity and that I would stop swearing. And literally overnight, porn and masturbation disappeared.
Wow.
I have no explanation for it. It hasn't really been an issue. The only thing that I would say about it is I kind of noticed over time was a little bit like giving up drugs. You know, at first I would, you know, have dreams and stuff, or, you know, think about it, you know, but not do it, you know, but that's gotten less and less and less over time, which I found kind of interesting. So, you know, I think that I think previous to that, I had related my being gay to sex. I think, you know, this is a journey for me and it's very fluid, but now I think my being gay has less to do with being sex. Yeah, it's hard to explain, but yeah, I'm just as gay as ever. But if not, you know, I think my sexual behavior was more about lust than about being gay. You know, I think straight guys can have just as big an issue with lust. You know, so.
Great insights.
Yeah. So, yeah, my being gay, I think it's more to do with, you know, how I relate to males, how I relate to females, how I relate to myself, how I relate to the world. You know, that's what makes me gay, you know, and I struggle with, you know, I know the Americans use the whole, you know, SSA terminology, and, you know, kind of, I don't know, is it SSA?
Yes.
SSA, yeah. You know, kind of when they talk about same-sex attraction, it's kind of like, that sounds like an add-on to me, you know. And, you know, I know that I'm, you know, gay to my core. You know, it's not just an add-on. You know, for some reason it's been there since I was 5 years old. But, you know, living the law of chastity has made me, you know, the longer that... Well, you know, just, yeah, it was, look, going back to the missionaries, you know, it was great. I could have really frank discussions with them, which was really helpful, you know, like just saying, well, how does this, you know, how does this work, you know, yeah. So, and they were, the poor boys, I feel sorry for them now, but they were really great. You know, they didn't bat an eyelid. They just, if I asked a question, they'd just tell me. You know, and I love them for that, you know. And so I, you know, after I'd started doing all this stuff and thought I could do both religions and realized that probably couldn't. So I went to this Buddhist meeting one night and they wanted me to lead the chanting, and like I led the chanting, it was just super uncomfortable. So after that, I rang up my leaders the next day and I said, look, I want to take 6 months off Buddhism because, you know, and I had told no one in Buddhism anything about my returning to Christianity or my looking at the Latter-day Saints. And so it was a little bit shocking for my Buddhist community. But I just sort of felt that I had to separate myself from them for a bit and just let this, you know, let the Holy Ghost have a shot, you know, have you know, let faith in Jesus Christ have a shot in my life. And so I kind of started going to church every week and, having the discussions and reading the scriptures and developing a relationship with the Lord. And, you know, I just never thought, and if you told me 5 years ago that I would ever consider or even be able to have a relationship with Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ again, I would have laughed in your face.
Wow.
But, you know, I'm so... I kind of feel that I've got, not only have I got my relationship back with God, but I've got my relationship with, you know, my relationship with the Lord is just nothing like I would have ever believed it would be possible to have. And I've actually got empowerment to live the commandments, which I never had before. You know, when I was a Pentecostal, that was the whole problem. You know, there was no power to be able to live the commandments. You know, I was always such a dismal failure at that.
Tell us what made you finally decide to get baptized in October of 2017. Was there one event or was it just you felt it was time?
Well, I think it was a culmination. I'd actually told the, you know how the missionaries keep asking you.
Yeah.
And I said February next year, because that was 6 months from when I'd stopped doing the Buddhist practice. And so I said, nah, February, if I'm going to get baptized at all, it'll be in February. But then every couple of weeks it would get shorter and shorter. And I think I just knew.
You just knew.
Brother Richard, like I just knew, like the Holy Ghost has just been so, like I'm just so much happier now, you know. And you know, I've had my mum living with me. I've been looking after her for about 8 years, and you know, she said, oh, you're just much happier now.
That's cool. She knows you.
And I didn't think I was unhappy, you know. I really didn't. I mean, I still don't think I wasn't unhappy. I'm just much more happy.
So let me, yeah. So you joined the church in October of 2017, but I want to bring in, I'm still going to call you Elder Thacker because this is the time of life you were Elder Thacker. When did you meet Craig?
Right, he'll always be Elder Thacker to me.
And let me have you pull that mic right up.
Okay. Like I was saying, I think the first time that I ever met Craig was at church. My wife and I had gone to the Wainui Amata ward, just visiting wards and getting to know what we were what our assignment was and who the priesthood leaders were and just the people. And it was a fast and testimony meeting, and they had this magnificent piano player that I had no idea who he was, but I got up and bore my testimony. I think my wife may have done so. The mission president was there that day, and I think both of them did. And I kept wishing that this gentleman who was playing the piano, someone had referred to him as a new convert in one of, I think it was the mission president, because he knew him and had interviewed him. But I didn't know any of the background story or anything. And anyway, I just kept praying, I hope he'll get up and share his story. And he did. And it was just beautiful. He was so open about being gay and about finding the Lord, and a much briefer version of what we've heard today already. And I fell in love with Craig right there on the spot. And then just a couple of months later, we were at a Wellington Stake conference. Again, just because we had chosen to go to stake conferences, we had three stakes we were responsible for in the Self-Reliance program. And who would be on the program but Craig Newsom, my friend. And he had been asked by the stake president there to share his story and to share his testimony and to not, at least as far as I could tell, to not hold back. And he did. And I couldn't believe that I was sitting in a stake conference hearing what I was hearing. And I don't know why I couldn't believe it, except that I just didn't think it would ever happen in the United States. That's how I felt. Like, who would be courageous enough to let a new convert do this? And I don't know. And of course, I've gotten to know President Thompson since then, and I realize he was courageous enough. And Craig did a beautiful job again of sharing. And I told him afterwards again how much I was appreciated that. So after that, we actually didn't have a lot to do with Craig other than to see him from time to time until Elder Frodsham came to live next door to us. And this was, gosh, probably a year later. And now help me out, Craig, if there was anything in between there, but I think we kind of didn't have a lot of contact for quite a while. But Elder Frodsham decided that Craig needed to perhaps talk with me because of questions regarding the policy that had come forth of of not baptizing young people between the ages of 8 and 18 who were in homes where the parents were gay. And I think that was it, wasn't it, Craig, where you came over? And
yeah.
I had shared with Elder Frodsham what I believed about that. To me, it was just as simple as could be. And I'm not suggesting that others are going to take it this way, because I've shared this with others and not all see this as a simple matter as I do. But here, I'll just share it briefly. Anyway, Craig came over and I shared with him that day that I saw this as being simply what would happen in the Church of Jesus Christ, which is a family-centered church and always has been, and that is that they're there to support the family and that they could not be there to cause friction between parents and children. It wouldn't work. And therefore, if the parents and the children weren't on the same page with regard to the commandments and what they were, including, of course, the law of chastity, that the church would be a constant source of friction, and they couldn't do that. So they needed to let the children make their own choice when they were old enough to be no longer under their parents' direct control as far as those kinds of decisions. And that's all it was. And that any child who was raised in that kind of a situation, I had already come to the belief that God is going to save his children. I just know that. And any parent would do that. And the only way that that's not going to happen is for the child to consciously, definitely decide they don't want to be with him. And that'll have to be their own choice. So God's going to save his children. He's going to bring them back. And it doesn't matter what circumstances we're raised under. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anything. There's no obstacle that will keep us from returning to our Heavenly Father and Mother except ourselves. We are the only obstacle that can do that. And so the church couldn't be in the way of that relationship of parent and child. And that's why the policy was needed. And it was a policy of love. And it was a policy of simply doing what had to be done to maintain that. Did I say anything else that day? I feel like I'm leaving something out. Craig, what? Oh, the solution. The solution to the problem is chastity. And so the difference between children being raised, for instance, in a couple that are heterosexual but unmarried, who are also breaking the law of chastity by the church's definition of what that is, that's a different situation, because the solution to that is marriage. And it's possible for that to happen very quickly. The solution in the case of gay men or women living together is divorce, given the current policy of the church. And that's not going to be a solution. That could never be a solution in a family-centered church, which is what the Church of Jesus Christ is.
It's a very thoughtful answer. Craig, talk about the Thackers and why you love them. And I think that's good for here to, for any missionary to hear what they need to do for people like you that are joining the church.
The Thackers. Well, I think that, I think Elder and Sister Thacker are just, you know, aside from being lovely people, I think that they live their faith. And Elder Thacker is extremely knowledgeable and extremely, like, not just knowledgeable for the sake of knowledgeable, but, you know, knowledgeable in the sense of being, you know, fully committed to the Lord. And I just think that their loving acceptance of, you know, people like me and wanting to understand people like, you know, like LGBT issues, you know, I think, you know, I often think, you know, you're, you know, the reason why I just so, you know, I liked you immediately when I saw you on Three Mormons, Saints Unscripted, that, you know, you had this thing that, you know, if we want to know about our LGBTQI people, we need to talk to them. And that's the same sense that I get off Elder and Sister Thacker. They want to know about this stuff, so they ain't talking about it with the straight people. They're talking about it with us.
That's awesome.
And I just, you know, I love that. And, you know, I know that there's areas in the church that, you know, I think that I've got it real easy over here. You know, I think that, you know, not only is this place, you know, easy to be gay in, but also within the church, I think the culture of our country is, you know, I think I have an easier time here. You know, I talk to my LGBT people, friends, you know, on North Star or people that are in Utah and stuff. And, you know, they just, you know, they don't even want to be out in the church. You know, they don't, you know, I know a lot of them do, but a lot of them don't, you know, and they like, and I'm, you know, well, A, I'm incapable of not being out, but B, you know, my ward has just been so loving and embracing. And, you know, I actually asked one of the sisters the other day, I was giving her a ride home, and we were talking, she'd come to an LGBT thing with me, it's Pride Week over here. And I said to her, oh, you know, I've always felt really accepted in the ward. Sometimes I wonder what they think of me, sort of fishing a bit. But, you know, she says, and I mean, I knew it already anyway, but, you know, she said that the ward loves me and that, you know, it has been, you know, they've been able to learn by having me there. And, yeah, you know, and I think it's just, you know, I think going back to Elder Thacker and Sister Thacker is, you know, they are so open to learning and to have, you know, just have LGBT people in their lives and love us. And, you know, I know that even, I hope Elder Thacker doesn't mind me saying that, you know, even within his family, you know, there's people there with, you know, different issues. And so it's kind of, you know, been helpful for them to know that, you know, people, we can, if we choose, we can do this thing, you know.
This is really helpful podcast, and we're at the hour and 10-minute mark, which is usually the closing time. But we could go for another hour. What, Elder Thacker, any thoughts you just give to other local leaders after seeing the way that this local congregation has embraced Craig? And because the doctrine's the change worldwide, the doctrine is the same worldwide. It's not like there's different doctrine in New Zealand than Utah. But sometimes the culture can be a little different from area to area. Any thoughts on what we can do to make sure people like Craig feel welcome?
Sure. First of all, just to the statement of listening, I taught for several years in the church educational system on the institute level, a class called The Gospel and World Religions. And one of the most important things I learned as I taught that class is the three rules. And I won't go over all of them, but the very first rule that was by Christer Stendahl is that if you want to learn about another faith, you go to that faith and you learn from them. And this is what Craig was just referring to. And it applies in this case, doesn't it? It's absolutely the same thing. You're not going to understand a Buddhist or Hindu or Jew or anyone else unless you are willing to listen to them and read their texts and what is sacred to them and look for the good, what they consider the best that they have. And then you're going to find the best. And of course, you'll immediately start realizing that, wow, we have a lot of things in common. Because when you look at the bests of all the faiths, they have the best in common. And so that was important. But in the case of Craig in particular, I not only learned a lot about being gay and what that was, that experience for him, and by, you know, association, I would assume for others that have that situation or that are that. But I learned in his case in particular how, you know, to sit with him and have him describe his experiences. It's just like today, again, I was thinking, you can't get a more pure, sincere desire to find the truth than this good man has. And it's so pure and so humble. It's just, you just know that it's, that God is true and that he loves his children, to see someone that is as good as Craig and to hear his story, I know I'm falling short of describing what I wanted
doing
to
great.
Say, but
you're doing
it,
great.
You know, that's what we need to do. We need to just realize that people are worthy, and if they are given a chance, they want to connect to their true home. Then we can help them. That's the only reason we exist as a church and as a people, is to help each other to make it back to our true home. And we all belong there. We ought to start acting like family, because that's what we are.
I love that, Elder Thacker. I think our listeners are just getting a little insight to Elder and Sister Thacker and their good hearts and all that they've done for decades to bring people to the kingdom. They've served in a lot of ways, and I sense you may be going out on another mission.
Yeah.
And so you're just dedicating your life to helping people come into Christ, and thank you for your service. And Craig, I love the way he talks about you. I'm so glad they're here to just talk about you on the organ, you giving testimony. We feel your spirit in this podcast. You've been to the temple. You've received your endowment. That could be a whole nother 30-minute section. But we're out of time. Could you just, any last thoughts you want to share with our listeners?
I guess, you know, I think the one confusing thing that I find is that, you know, I don't know what I would say to younger people. You know, I feel that like I've come to the church older, and so for me to make the choice to live the law of chastity, you know, it's like I've done it all. So it's not like I feel that I'm, you know, missing out on anything. But, you know, I've heard you interview, you know, younger people, you know, on your podcast. And, you know, I just love these people. You know, I wish I'd had their, I don't know. I think there's a lot about the restored gospel of Jesus Christ that, you know, I just, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I didn't get an opportunity to know these things when I was young. And, you know, I know that it's not easy for people. And I know that, you know, hey, maybe it's even only a minority that stay, you know, in the church. But, you know, I guess my message, and I know that not everyone, you know, we live in different cultures and different places and everything, but, you know, I have this fantasy that if every LGBTQI person in the church came out all simultaneously, you know, on the same day, that the church, you know, our church would, we would just, it would just be so transformative. You know, I think that, you know, I know that's not going to happen. And I know that, you know, look, people have every right, and I'm not demanding that people come out.
Right.
But all I'm saying is that, you know, I see in 20, 30, 50, 100 years' time, when there's more and more of people like me in the church, you know, I never had role models when I was growing up. You know, and, you know, at least I know that by me being here and being out here, that, you know, I know there's a couple of kids in my ward, you know, they're like little baby gays. You can spot them a mile off, you know, and I just love the thought that, you know, eventually when they start realizing what's going on for them, that they've got someone, you know, in their vicinity that they can talk to, or that their parents can talk to, that, you know, that it's not the worst thing in the world for, you know, any of us to be whatever we are on the spectrum of the rainbow.
I think that's
and it's a glorious rainbow.
It's a glorious rainbow, and I've thought, you know, with 3 to 5% of the population being LGBTQ, if every Latter-day Saint came out, that may be 760,000 people, Craig. And so yeah. I think, you know, we do have a lot of people that are part of our own community, our own families. And, you know, I know you mentioned a couple comments. I know you mentioned this period of time when you dressed as a woman and you really yeah. probably were not transgender. And I think both of us understand that some people, just like you, have been gay and continue to be gay and will always orientate gay, that some people really do identify as trans. And that is a long-term feeling that they have. And I think your situation obviously was more short-term and probably more just finding yourself yeah. than actually being trans. So I want to give yeah. that out there to both of us, I think, want to give that out to our trans friends. And just the point that you've always been gay and that's your orientation. And it's interesting to me to hear it from the perspective of you finding that our church had this, which I think is just more light and understanding that our leaders get, that we realized that how you're created is something that can't be changed. And we don't know why you were created and we can't put it back on you to become straight. And I love that our inspired leaders have gotten, you know, have understood that. And it certainly then takes the pressure off you and other people to sort of put it back on you to be straight. Because that, as you know, is not solvable. And then I look at your life story, and if you feel like it's up to you to be straight and you can't, then this period of time you spent away from God and drugs and alcohol and exploring your life kind of makes sense. And I think the loving God that Alan, with tears in his eyes, talked about is the God that so has loved you. And when you came back, he just loves you, Craig, and he doesn't define you yeah. by your mistakes, your weaknesses. He just looks at you as a worthy son that's worthy of all of his love, like he does all of his children. I can sense Alan's great heart on that doctrine. So we've got to sign off, but I do want to just leave it back to Elder Thacker. Any last comments, Elder Thacker? And great job, Craig. You are a great man. We love you. And I just think it's wonderful that your this podcast will 3,000-4,000 people, will 5,000 people listen to this, and your story will help so many. So thank you for the courage to share your story. And it sounds like you've been sharing it over the pulpit. So this is just more of what you're used to. So thank you. You are a great man. I'm glad to be your friend and what you're teaching me about how to become a better disciple and a better person. But Elder Thacker, any final thoughts?
Well, Craig had never shared with me his fantasy about about the having everybody in the church who is gay or whatever orientation come out on the same day. I think it's a great idea, Craig. and though I believe, like you, it's not likely to happen, it would be, here's why it's a great idea, because we need you. Absolutely, we need you. And our church, which is the Church of Jesus Christ, would soar so much higher and fulfill its purpose so much better if we just got to know you better and accepted you and loved you the way our Heavenly Father, our Heavenly Parents already do. So thank you, Craig, for doing that for me. And I hope our friendship, I believe it will be forever. And I look forward to seeing you again soon. And kia ora to you too.
And thank our listeners for joining us on another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love. This is Richard Osler signing off.